The stories that I'm reading from are all from a series that I've been working on called The Watchers. And essentially they are reports from the field from some time that my friends and family and I have been doing some work in the international spy circles. This first one is called Silent Auction. I descend from my mother's attic and emerge in an alleyway in Damascus. S warned me not to come alone, but this is a quickly developing situation. A fish merchant stands at the corner. I can see rubies in the mouth and gills of one fat trout. That one, I say, and the merchant flips the fish into a paper sack. A few rubies spill, but the merchant doesn't see. I pretend not to notice. There are more gems inside the fish. I glimpse S through an open window above. A burlap mask has been placed over his face, but I know him by the scar at his right temple. How did they find him? The merchant starts yelling at me. I don't have any cash, and he doesn't want the junk from my mother's attic. I leave the fish and run, but the man keeps yelling. A boy on a bicycle pulls up beside me and says in English, "Cover's blown." Spread out across the central square are pieces of furniture from my brother's bedroom. Local men and women, along with a few tourists, examine the desk and the dresser, the shelves, the nightstands. They stick small black numbers to the things they want. My brother is asleep in his bed. He always sleeps late. The boy on the bicycle gives me a handful of the black numbers. I go to my brother and kneel beside him, but his face and hands are already covered. This one is Papers in Order. The documents we'd stolen were printed on jigsaw puzzle pieces. E had been working since dawn. She was good, but at sundown the puzzle was only halfway finished. I ordered takeout, opened two beers, and joined her at the table. S came into the room swinging his arms. There were tears on his cheeks. "My father," he said. I put my arms around him. I didn't want him to knock over the puzzle. "I know," I said, though I didn't know. "He just got smaller and smaller," S said. "It went on for weeks. We lost him in the laundry." I squeezed his shoulders. "Who did this?" E got up from the table. "It was the American," she said. "He did the same thing to my sister." We geared up. Our motorcycles were old, but they sounded good. Without speaking, we knew where we were headed. Those blinking red lights on the horizon, a communications array. How had we never noticed before? We took the tunnel under the river. Soldiers stopped us at the checkpoint halfway. None of us had our papers. S said, "Now we'll see who's been feeding the piper." A soldier brought us a flask. "Drink from this," he said. "It keeps the weather out." S and I took deep gulps, but E only smelled it. The soldier looked offended, snatched back the flask, and put his hand on the butt of his pistol. Then he looked at the ground and shouted, "Schnell! Schnell!" The tunnel was filling with aquarium water. Green pebbles, plastic mermaids, and crawdads oozed up out of the drains. We rolled out, and I heard E laughing. She'd made this happen, called it in days ago. The perfect distraction. "I love you," I told her. She couldn't hear me over the engines. "What?" "You can see Jupiter tonight," I said. I pointed, and there it was, big and orange over the clouds, watching us with its one weird eye. A friend of mine from high school once observed that anytime there are German soldiers in any action movie, they must at least once cry out, "Schnell!" So I figured that had to go in there. This is Shots Fired. I'm called in after hours to inspect the damage. The detective pulls the coat out of the closet with a gloved hand, shows me the bullet hole in the right breast. The hole is charred at the edges. "No blood, though," he says. "No body." I tell him that's because no one was wearing the coat at the time. The detective is stunned. I show him the back of the coat, the hole there, and the hole in the coat hanging behind the first coat, and the hole in the next coat, seven coats in all, and the bullet passed through all of them. "Monsters," the detective says. I point out a hole in the wall at the back of the closet. "What do you see through there?" I ask him. He puts his eye to the hole and says, "It's like the goddamn bottom of the sea." I instruct him to keep watching, then head into the hallway. It's good these local yahoos called me in. They have no idea what they're dealing with. S is beside me, opening a can of peaches. Status? We're looking for a room with deep cover and underworld ties. No windows, one door, both locked. S drops a peach slice into his open mouth like he's a dolphin, and he's also feeding the dolphin. Worse than I thought, he said. You suspect the American? Yes, or one of his chief agents. S's eyes go wide. He sets the can on the floor and leaps down the nearest laundry chute. There are protocols. I put my ear to the first door that gives me a suspicious look. I hear gurgling and maybe a teletype transmission. I kick the door down. My brother is here, asleep, in bed. I check him for wounds. He's covered in popcorn, but no sign of struggle. The only light in the room comes from the aquarium. I hunker down and peer into its depths. Past the dancing seaweed, over the ramparts of a plastic castle, a school of silvery fish zigzags, then disperses. And there it is, a little gray submarine, motoring over the sandy floor, pinging us with its sonar. Mom, my brother calls, half awake. I wave my hand at him, shushing. He sits up and looks at me. He doesn't know my code name and calls me by the one I grew up with. I wave at him again, signaling for him to cut it. The submarine is moving fast now, and the pinging grows louder. Its torpedo bays are open. I grab my brother and pull him under the bed. Cover your ears, I tell him. We stare at the shadows moving across the floor and wait for the blast. I pray that the detective is still watching, that he trained himself never to blink. I'm going to cheat and read one new one. My little sister is here, and I read two with my brothers in it, and I felt like I should read one with her in it so she doesn't feel left out. It's very complicated being the eldest. You have to always achieve this balance. This is called The Partisans. A forest of tall pines. Pale brown needles crunch under our boots. We passed centuries-old farms and churches, small family cemeteries. None of this was on the maps. We'd been told to expect a reservoir, a redded dirt track, a pump station safe house. Instead, we were deep in enemy territory, and the sun was going down. S leaned back and howled, Wolfman style. He was losing it. I grabbed him by his lapels and pushed him against a tree, harder than I'd meant to. This is just what they want, G said. Gentlemen, we have to keep our hearts bound up in razor wire. We camped that night in a grotto near a double waterfall. Mattresses were strewn alongside the water, but we knew better than to use them. Downstream, some French teenagers passed around a bottle of liquor. They cavorted around the campfire, singing Frère Jacques, repeating the first two lines over and over because they couldn't remember what comes after Dormez-vous. One of them approached us. He was tall, and he looked like he'd seen some things. Your fire, it doesn't look too hot, he said. You will come and sit with us? The French girls smiled at one another, then gazed into their own fire, hugging their knees through flowered skirts. We joined them. G took a deck of cards from his satchel and began to teach the girls pinochle. S roasted fish on the sharpened sticks he speared them with. The leader took me aside. Quietly, he said, You are the Hounds of Gibraltar, no? So that was how we're known in these parts. I said nothing. He pulled two cigarettes from his shirt pocket, stuck both in his mouth, and lit them. He handed me one. I didn't smoke, but I wasn't about to let some French kid show me up, so I puffed away. We intercepted a pulley train this morning, he said. Some real old guard shit. We were outnumbered, but we knew the trees. He shrugged. We did what we had to do, you know? I looked around the campsite and saw, for the first time, the corpses piled at the edge of the firelight. There were so many of them, still in their fatigues and helmets, their guts spilled over the ground. These kids were butchers. I went back to the fire and put my hand on G's shoulder. He just dealt the cards for another round. Last game, I said, praying that he wouldn't see the bodies and freak. We move at midnight. The girls smiled at me. One of them swept a strand of hair behind her ear. I recognized her. She was my sister. One sad look from her, and I understood what had happened. That she'd taken that acting job in Vichy, then fallen in with this crew. That she'd had to play along to survive, just as we were doing now. Just as we'd have to keep doing. But for how long? I went to S. His fish was burned to a crisp, and the spear was starting to catch. His other hand was on the butt of his pistol. Up there, he said. Do you see them? Along the ridge, a dozen shapes moved. At first, I thought the trees themselves were marching, but those were just the legs of the animals. Like deer, but almost as tall as the trees. They dipped their heads to keep their antlers from getting caught in the high branches. The leader of the French teenagers was beside me. He leaned close, and I could smell the liquor and tobacco on his breath. Ghosts, he said to me. Only ghosts.
Time for one more?
Sure.
Okay, I'll just read one more. This is called The American. I remember how the American used to come around the house when I was 9 or 10, blending in with my parents' friends. He drank beer in the kitchen, talking loudly about whatever game was on television. He always had a different job: construction, deep river salvage, accounting. I was drawing a lot of castles then. The American told me about the portcullis, the murder hole, and the oubliette. He knew so much. Sometimes he'd be up later than my parents, and sometimes he'd have a girl with him. I saw them on the patio out back one night, sitting together on one chair. He whispered something into her ear, and she laughed. Once he took me with him in his pickup to get a pizza. He said, "Your mom was the coolest back in the day. We'd drive around in that little car of hers with the top down. What a lady." I didn't know what to say, so I told the American that I liked his Superman t-shirt. "It's yours," he said, and he took it off right there, craning out of it while he drove, first with one hand, then with the other, blind for a moment. The shirt was huge and full of holes. It smelled terrible. But I'd said I liked it, so I had to put it on. I came home from school one day to find the American at the house. No one else was there. "Let's walk," he said. We walked around the neighborhood. I saw friends in their backyards, and I hoped they didn't see me. "I could use someone like you on my team," the American said. "I've got plans, big plans. There's a place for you if you want in." I didn't know how to refuse him. It was just like the t-shirt. I told him that I wanted in. I went to meetings in the basement of the public library. Coffee maker, a few people wearing ties, a few drifters. Maps on the walls, stacks of documents on a fold-out table. The American came sometimes, but usually he was too busy, and the woman I'd seen with him on the patio ran the meetings in his absence. We discussed pressure points, electrical systems, the benefits of meditation, propaganda, small island nations, archaic card games, chemistry, seduction, protection rackets, 1960s French cinema, firearms. I was always behind, and I had to pretend like I understood what the group was talking about. When I approached one of the other members, the older brother of a friend, and asked him if he could help get me up to speed, he looked at me like I was an insect. Eventually, I stopped going to the meetings. I pursued other interests. For a while, I played the recorder at historical reenactments. I went hiking and got lost on purpose to practice my orienteering. The American stopped coming around, but as the years passed, I saw signs of his work everywhere. Few would have recognized his hand, but for me there was no mistaking it. It was there in the weather reports, in the stock numbers, in the comics. He sometimes appeared in newspaper photographs of politicians and business leaders, always at the edge of the frame. Finally, the other side reached out. Coded messages in snack boxes, wind-blown pamphlets on the sidewalk, smoke signals on the horizon, the usual recruitment tools. My training began in earnest. They knew from the start about my association with the American. I told them everything I could remember from those meetings in the library basement, but they either nodded like they already knew all that, or told me that I'd probably been fed lies, that the American had foreseen even this moment. Now we trace his movements by satellite, and by the subtle seismic activity he leaves in his wake. Sometimes it feels like we're making progress. Usually it feels like we're just the clueless guests at his party, the ones who didn't know it was a costume party. The Superman t-shirt is still in my top dresser drawer. I haven't worn it since the day the American gave it to me, but I can't get rid of it either. Its smell grows more sour every year. I'll stop there.